Well, right before you called, there was a hellacious thunder and lightning storm, and lightning was striking close here, and I thought all the power would go out. So I was getting ready to email you from my phone to tell you that I had no power.
Just toss them overboard when you're sitting having lunch, or you know, just anything like that.
The classic.
We actually were joking about setting up an OnlyFins account.
Here's to us all swimming through the shit and making more sense of it.
Why they unprotected? Planet Earth, we can't neglect it. Ah, nature sexy. We need this place, so please respect it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of Wild and Unprotected. On today's episode, we have the president of Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge. I know that's a tongue twister, but her name is Becca Bryan. Becca, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, welcome to the show, Becca.
Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. It's been a delight getting to know you in the few moments before we hit record, but let's go ahead and start before we dive into Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge. Let's talk a little bit about Becca. Could you explain to us, have you always been a Floridian, or are you a transplant? Are you originally from here, or how did you get started in Florida Panther realm?
Well, I'm a transplant. I was born and raised in Western Pennsylvania. I went to college in West Virginia. After I graduated from college, I moved out to Los Angeles because I wanted to be an actress. And I soon found out that that was just an absolute shit way to make a living. Excuse my language.
We welcome that here.
You know, if you're not a smart girl, you'll never figure out that when someone, you go to visit a casting director, they ask if you can read without your bra or your shirt on, you know, and you say, no, I cannot read without my bra and my shirt on and walk out the door. So as soon as that happened, I realized that that was not the path I wanted to take for my career. So I started working in community theaters as a stage manager. But I lived out there for 10 years. And after the riots in the early 90s, I moved to Key West, where I had some friends and had visited. And I lived there for almost 5 years before moving up here to Fort Lauderdale. So, and that's how I got here. And rather a long way to go from LA to Key West, and then up here to Fort Lauderdale. But I'm glad I did. You know, there are great parts to everywhere I lived. Western Pennsylvania, I was just visiting there last week. West Virginia's beautiful and mountainous. Key West is, you know, very coastal. It's surrounded by water, very much the island lifestyle of living. LA, you know, is a huge, very crowded city full of different ethnicities and different occupations. I loved living out there until the riots, but that was it for me. I think it was about a year after the 90s riots when I left and moved to Key West, which was not really culture shock, but it was more like I could ride my bike around Key West to get my errands done. So that was nice rather than having to take the bus everywhere.
So that is, yes, two completely different worlds.
Very different worlds. Fort Lauderdale, a lot of people consider Fort Lauderdale to be a part of the Miami metropolis area, and I guess geographically it might be, but Fort Lauderdale is much different than Miami. It's a smaller city. It's less crowded. There's lots of nature parks here and trails and everything like that. You know, I love Florida. I love this peninsula state. I love Southwest Florida because it's got a lot of wild open space that anyone can walk the trails for free and appreciate nature when you're stuck indoors working all the time, you know. And Florida has some good initiatives and put some decent money aside for land acquisition to prevent more land development in the future. So,
right on. Yeah. Fingers crossed for sure.
Fingers crossed for sure.
So, you know, transitioning from LA in the 90s to Florida, can you kind of touch base on what really kicked off your career in the conservation space? And specifically with the Marine Mammal Conservancy.
Well, I think that, you know, I've always been a writer. For most of the last 20 years of my work life, I've been a writer of different things. I've been an SEO content writer. I've been a business plan writer and editor. I've always done freelance writing on different topics. When I moved up to Fort Lauderdale from Key West, I heard about a volunteer opportunity down in Key Largo, which is the very northern part of the Florida Keys, about a very large marine mammal stranding, dolphin stranding. It was just a lot of rough-toothed dolphins, which are deep water, far out in the sea, marine mammals. And they're called rough teeth because if you touch their teeth, they're rough. They feel rough instead of like smooth like ours. And it was with this organization called the Marine Mammal Conservancy, which is now defunct. They had regular staff members, or what we call senior trainers, that you learned from and that you volunteered with. So you would learn everything you need to learn, like how to prepare the fish for them to eat, how to put medication and water in the fish for them to eat. We had to observe their behavior. We were encouraged to ask questions if we didn't know what type of behavior meant, you know. And to me, that it was like all brand new. I'd never seen a dolphin up close before. So I had just like tons of questions I was asking all the time. Well, what does this mean? What does it mean when they slap their tail that hard? What does it mean when they stick their head out of the water like this? You know, what does it mean when they roll over? You know, what's that phlegmy stuff they blew out of their blowhole? Is that normal? I mean, I had tons of questions, and they encouraged me to ask any questions I had, and I did. And it was on a remote site. I did a lot of day shifts, then weekend shifts, because I had a full-time job, and I learned an awful lot about, marine mammal strandings and rough-toothed dolphins. And one of the first things I learned from one of the Marine Mammal Conservancy's oldest volunteers was, when the dolphin politics start to fly, you duck and keep your mouth shut, because dolphin politics, like any animal-related volunteer work or care, is highly heated. And I just learned, because I was a brand new volunteer, just to stay out of it. In the later years, there was a stranding with one juvenile male dolphin that the Navy found in Key West, and they named him Cutter for, you know, a Navy vessel, Cutter. And that little guy was a little stinker. he was feisty and rebellious and super energetic and playful. I remember one time swimming around, in a big fenced in area. I was on a styrofoam kickboard, and I was just swimming around, just monitoring his behavior. And he went deep under the water, and he went stealth. And then he came right up underneath my little surfboard and just completely knocked me off it, took the surfboard and swam all the way down the water with it. And here I am struggling in the water to swim. I do know how to swim, by the way. He did bring it back. And in the 1 hour's time, he did that three times. And he knew what he was doing. They're not dumb. They're not dumb at all. And when it came time to release him, because he was releasable, some of our hardier, bigger, stronger staff members had to try to catch him in the water so they could hold him and put the GPS tracker on his dorsal fin, which doesn't hurt them at all. But I do remember that he squirmed himself and flipped himself out of their arms right back in the water. And everyone was just cussing and upset because I had to go get him again. Our director was collaring at people, and I was just sitting there going, good job, kid. They finally did get him and put the tracker on it. They released him off of Key West in a pod full of his species. And I think probably within a day's time, we lost a signal. People were driving around with a big antenna on the top of their trucks trying to catch a signal, and they couldn't find it anywhere. And they kept asking me if I wanted to go. And I said, no. You know, I said, listen, he's a juvenile boy. They gave him a phone to call home, and he ditched it immediately. So that tells me that you can drive around for hours and you're never going to find the little shit. So,
yeah. I feel like that's pretty typical for teenage boys.
Yeah, so I'm like, he's a teenage boy, and you gave him a cell phone to call home, and he threw it right off. You know, and I don't think he's may have been spotted a few times by another dolphin organization, but no one really knows. My favorite stranding event was Castaway's stranding event, and she was she's single stranded in the Sarasota, Florida area. She was rescued and rehabbed and released in the Sarasota area, and she stranded two other times before before my organization was asked to bring her to Key Largo and work with her. She was deaf, and at the time she was pregnant. Although we did not know when we got her in Key Largo that she was deaf, we just knew that she had been problematic and super aggressive with the people that were taking care of her in Sarasota. So everyone was a little on edge when they got in the water with her, whether to give her fish or check her vital signs or anything like that. She was a big, beautiful offshore dolphin. In the 6 months that we had her before she was released to a swim with the dolphins place in Key Largo, she exhibited just wonderful affection for her favorite human beings. She presented all sorts of crazy behavior. Usually in the middle of the night when there was a horrendous thunderstorm happening, we had her in a big holding area, and she would sink to the bottom of it, just float down to the bottom and completely disappear. And when they do that, the volunteer was supposed to count on a stopwatch how long they're underwater. When I clocked her underwater for 12 minutes, I told our director, and he said, she'll be okay. The next night, in a raging thunderstorm, pouring down rain, lightning, wind blowing everywhere, she did it again, and she was underwater for 15 minutes, and I was having a stroke. I was told I could not leave the dock, so I'm a good girl. I follow orders. I stood on the very edge of the dock, and we had a trailer, an office trailer, where the director was sleeping, and I know that I could not throw anything far enough to hit that trailer to wake him up. So instead, I picked up a bunch of rocks, and I walked about 5 feet off the dock ramp, and I started throwing each stone as hard as I could over and over again, picking up more. I picked up a rock finally, and it actually hit the door, and he came out, and I said, she's been underwater for 15 minutes. So he comes out, and he takes his good old time, and he's walking up the dock, and halfway up the dock, Castaway sticks her head out of the water, and she's laughing and smiling, and I looked at her, and I said, you shit, you scared the hell out of me, you know, and he's looking at me like, what's the problem? You know, the next night was a weeknight, and I couldn't be there, and someone told me that a volunteer had gone to the director and said, oh my God, Castaway's been underwater for 13 minutes. And he said, don't wake me up until she's been down for 16, because we clocked her at 15 last night. She was beautiful. She was affectionate, a little bit jealous now and then, super playful. I bonded with her almost immediately. The first time I looked her in the eye, she looked at me, you know, like one eye. They look at you, roll over to side, look at you with one eye. And that just clicked. You know, it gets you right in your heart. And once it gets in there, it's almost impossible to get it out if you wanted to get out, which I never did. I spent a lot of overnight shifts with her that were like 8 to 12 hours long. I knew her behavior as well as anyone, And when she went to the Swim with the Dolphins place, I drove down to Key Largo as often as I could to swim with her so she didn't think that we had abandoned her. By the way, she did have her calf at the Marine Mammal Conservancy, but he didn't make it. It was like, I think they said it was like failure to thrive kind of situation, but Castaway was an excellent mom for being deaf and having to stay awake 24 hours a day to keep tabs on him, even though there were like four volunteers in the water, you know, helping her out and everything. Castaway did pass away several years ago. She had a stroke and she passed away. And I grieved that loss like I grieved the loss of my own pets. So, but, you know, dolphin strandings are long events in the elements, the heat, the rain, the cold, wind, thunderstorms, you name it. You're on your own. You have to bring your own food, bring your own place to sleep. I often slept in my car when I had a chance to take a nap, and actually I got a really, really good sleep in there. But it was, I mean, they're great to do. If there was a call for volunteers at a marine mammal stranding, by all means, step up. You're just going to learn to love them and learn a lot more about them.
Yeah. Your journey, kind of into kind of the conservation world is pretty starkly different than what we normally encounter on the show. A lot of it's academia based, you know, people who are going through, their PhD programs, and to see someone who started just essentially directly from volunteering, forming relationships with animals and that evolving to where you are now. That's a pretty interesting story, and I'm glad you're able to share it with us today.
Yeah, I'm not a biologist. I do not have a scientific background. And I think that gives me It gives me the pleasure and the freedom to project my human feelings onto the animal, onto whatever animal it is, to understand them and bring them to people's attention in a way that most human beings think of animals that they love. You know, there are a lot of wildlife biologists and environmentalists in my wonderful circle. Every single one of them knows that I do not have a scientific background. So when I tell you that the Florida panther mama broketail is absolutely the best mom in the world, you better believe it. And it's not based on the fact that she said several litters of kittens on the panther refuge. It's not based on the fact, you know, that she was born and raised on the refuge or anything scientific behind it. It's based on the fact of what I've seen and what I've heard from people, you know, and that's what gets people interested in wildlife conservation. You may get your biologists, you know, in there that want to relate the scientific, you know, specifics about wildlife. But the general public wants to know what they're like. What's their personality? What do they eat? Where do they roam? What are their threats? I mean, Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge gets emails on a pretty regular basis from people from all over this country asking, you know, about Florida panthers. What are their threats? Where do they live? What do they eat? You know, and what can you tell us about them? So you have to make it personal to people or they won't care. Sorry, rambled there.
Before we get too far into this week's episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is you, our listeners. How? Well, now that we're a nonprofit, the donations that we receive go directly towards funding our shows. Want to help or need more information? Visit wildscapeproduction.com/donate to support the show. We're so thankful for the support. You make the show exactly what it is. Oh no, it's okay. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's backtrack into back into your journey of being a freelance writer. You know, you mentioned a couple of dolphin stranding experiences early on in your career. Are there any pieces of literature or writing that you have that you can directly credit into your transition into panthers? Like, how did you go from Marine to Florida Panther?
That's a great question. Living in Fort Lauderdale, I was working for about 3 years in a very dead-end job as an SEO content writer for a company here. I was bored to tears, and I wanted to write something fun and interesting to me. And for a long time before this, I did freelance writing where I interviewed actors and actresses and directors out in Hollywood and sold the stories to my hometown newspaper. That's kind of how it all got started. I first started writing about endangered wildlife in different countries. Like, you know, South Africa has a lot of endangered species. I wrote about the African elephant. I wrote about lions for World Lion Day for a site from India, an environmental group for India. I shared all those with my parents, and my dad said to me, "Why aren't you writing about Florida's endangered wildlife?" So immediately, of course, I'm thinking Florida panther, and researching that, I tried to figure out where you can see them, but, you know, they're elusive. They don't want you to see them. And I wasn't about to go camping in some of the big nature preserves or in the refuge here, because I've never never really liked camping, to be honest with you. So the route I took was I found an orphaned, was she orphaned? An orphaned Florida panther kitten that Zoo Miami had just taken in. Now, when there's an orphaned or an abandoned Florida panther kitten, someone usually calls the Florida Wildlife Conservation Commission, who comes in and picks up the animal, takes them to a veterinary clinic in Naples, Florida, because that's Southwest Florida is usually, you know, where the strongest population is. And then it's determined by several authoritative sources what happens to that panther kitten. This panther kitten's mom and two siblings were hit by cars, and she was found hiding in some bushes on a golf course. Zoo Miami has the space for her. They built a bigger space for her. She's been living there now. She's all grown up. She is what they call an ambassador animal. She's an ambassador animal. She was the first Florida panther I ever met in person. She still had the kitten. You could see some faded spots from her kittenhood. You could see she still had blue eyes from her kittenhood. She was fiercely defensive of everyone, naturally. But I immediately fell in love with her. She was named Mahalo, which is an Indian name, which means strong woman or strong female. And a lot of abandoned Florida panthers get Indian names from Native American names, I should say, because Florida has a very strong Native American history. So it's kind of playing, you know, honoring the Native Americans with that. So Mahala's still down at Zoo Miami. I still go down to visit her. She now knows she is the queen bee. And she will come out. She will come out when she wants to come out. She's got a big indoor habitat that is air conditioned. She's got a lot of space to play outside. From Athena, I went to, I think it was the Naples Zoo, which has, I think they had an orphan. She was an orphan Florida panther kitten. I named her Sassafras, Sassy for short. She's also now all grown up and sassy. And she's very sassy. She likes to show off sometimes too. And then I wrote about, the Naples Zoo has Athena. Athena was abandoned in Big Cypress National Preserve, which is a huge area. Sassafras at the West Palm Beach Zoo was orphaned. So I wrote about three Florida panthers, and I kept trying to find more. So I found two more up in the North Jacksonville, Florida area, two brothers whose mother had to be euthanized because she she got the wasting disease that was going around for panthers. I forget the name of it, but it was a disease where it basically renders the hindquarters useless. But these, yeah, it's horrible. I watched a video of one kitten that had it, and you can't watch it if you have a heart. You can't watch it. It just rips your heart out so much. But the female that was euthanized, her, you know, her two boys are big, growling, hissing, fun-loving, rock-climbing Florida panthers up there. So I went up there and I wrote about them. So that's kind of how my wildlife conservation writing evolved into writing about Florida panthers. And from that writing, someone from the Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge board contacted me and asked me if I was interested in joining the board. I knew nothing about friends groups. I knew a little bit about the Panther Refuge. So I did a little looking around and I noticed that there was one Panther advocate whose name I was seeing in just almost every Panther article, news article that came out, and I joined the board because she was on the board. And I first started, they put me in the media chairperson position. So I was answering emails and doing little clips for Southwest Florida news stations and trying to drum up interest for the friends group and everything else. We had some leadership changes. And I ended up as president of the board where I am now.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about how you became the president, because we had talked about this in our call before our recording, and I thought this was a particularly interesting story. So let's dive into that a little.
Well, at the time that the board went through some leadership changes, there were four of us left on the board. The treasurer, the secretary, the advocacy chair, and me. And we had one board meeting. It was on Zoom because we're scattered around Florida. And I said, well, we can't just sit here without at least a board president. And I said, and you can't be it because you're the treasurer, and you can't be it because you're the secretary, and you don't want to be it because you're the advocacy chair. I said, so that only leaves one person. And they all sat there. And I said, well, that would be me. So all in favor of making me the board chairman, say aye. And of course, there were only three people to do that. So they did. And that's how it ended. That's how I ended up the board chair and taking over. This was like right before all of the COVID-19 shutdowns and everything. And then, you know, the refuge was shut down and we had our annual meeting, which we invite lots of people to. We had to do that over Zoom and everything, but we evolved and we keep moving. We had a brand new annual meeting recently this year in Naples at a big environmental center. It was great. I got two new board members from it. Yay. One of them said she would be the secretary. Double yay, because I was doing that and I suck at it. Just... I've never been a good note taker. So that's how that all came about, you know, and I'm still the board president. Now we have a vice president, the treasurer and the secretary. Everyone that's on the Friends board is working or has worked in environmental or wildlife conservation for most of their careers. And they are extremely well aware and educated and then are very intelligent about and very active in panther conservation in Florida.
Well, yeah, let's dive into that. Let's dive more into Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge and what your organization, like what do they do? So like you said, the general public wants to know, you know, let's give it to them and give us give us the details that you love talking about.
Okay. Well, let's see. The National Wildlife Refuge System in the United States has 588 National Wildlife Refuges and hatcheries. And most of them have a Friends of whatever National Wildlife Refuge or hatchery organization. Most of us are all volunteer organization that guides, that supports and advocates for our specific wildlife refuge or hatchery. So in the Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge organization, we support the activities and the staff and the goals of the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge and of the 10,000 Islands National Wildlife Refuge, which is a wide open space and marshy space in the water in Southwest Florida. And we're all a part of this one complex called the Southwest Florida Gulf Complex of Refuges, which includes J.R. Ding Darling National Wildlife Refuge, which is on Sanibel Island. Ding Darling National Wildlife Refuge is a beautiful, beautiful place to go visit if you're over there. They have an extremely active and nicely wealthy friends group. We are Friends of the Florida Panthers. We're the scrappy little sister refuge. We don't have, you know, a ton of money. We have money, but we don't have a ton of money. We're careful with our money. And it's people drive by the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge all the time. People that live in Immokalee, Florida, where it's located, drive right by. I had no idea there was a wildlife refuge here. Well, the sign is like humongous on each side of the refuge. And were you just driving too fast that you couldn't read Florida Panther Wildlife Refuge? Maybe you slow down, you can see it. So it's the Panther Refuge is 26,500 acres. It's humongous. There are true open trails. We try to have some activities on the refuge every year, like we have a refuge open house. And we invite the public. It's free. They come in. They can take a swamp buggy ride through parts of the refuge that you normally can't walk through, which, you know, do you know where a swamp buggy is?
I was going to say, I think we need to elaborate on that. I think the West Coasters that listen to the show might not know what a swamp buggy is.
It is a huge vehicle that is high off the ground, that has seats on it and can be driven, that enables people to essentially drive it through swamps and other, you know, thick growth in a natural area. When you're sitting on them, like I said, I don't know the feet because I'm not a math person, but you can see, instead of walking at a ground level, you're way up above it, looking down on it. So you can see everything below you and have essentially a better view. They're very loud and a lot of people love them because of the view that you get. So that's why they're called swamp buggies. Essentially they've got tires and the capacity to actually, you know, maneuver through swamps if they need to. And there are a lot of swamps in Southwest Florida.
Yeah, that's definitely something that you don't see in many other places, is a bunch of swampland. So swamp buggies are definitely, I would say, a Florida thing.
Yes, they are. And anytime you hear any politician say, it's time to clean the swamp, all you got to say is, now listen, swamps are absolutely valuable to the ecosystem. So if you want to clean the swamp out, you're going to kill the ecosystem. But there are a few, you know, cyanobacteria infested individuals in the political swamps that do need to be cleaned out. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I cleared that up. Well, that's what the friends said. And you don't have to live in Florida to become a friends supporter or a friends member. You can live anywhere you want. We have members that live all across the United States. And, you know, and whenever they come to Southwest Florida, they like to visit the refuge and other places and everything. But we're happy to have members come from wherever they want to be, whether it's the United States or any other nation in the world. And the refuge does get a lot of visitors. I mean, I think it was during the early part of Russia's push into the Ukraine, there were a lot of Ukrainians that moved into Poland. So there were a lot of Polish people that wanted to take a break from the influx and would visit their friends or relatives in South Florida, who eventually I met a few of them at the Panther Refuge one morning. And most were not prepared at all to be walking through an area that has scratchy branches and rocks. And mosquitoes.
Yeah, I'm sure you have quite a few people who come inappropriately dressed to walk a trail like that.
Yeah, flip-flops, short shorts, a tank top, you know what I'm saying? You can't walk through there like that. There's rocks and there's tree stumps and there's snakes on the ground and gopher tortoises. You know, I said, you need to wear sturdy shoes. And if you have long pants, put them on. And if you have long sleeves, put them on. You know, if you don't, then I gave them a can of Deep Woods Off, which is, heavy duty mosquito repellent. I'm like, take this, spray it all over your body and protect yourself. And they're like, oh, we're going to see panthers. And you're not going to see panthers. They're going to see you, but you're not going to see them. You know, I walked the trails a few times, even by myself once, which wasn't the brightest idea, but you don't see them.
Yeah, a trail hike through the mountains is vastly different than a trail hike through Florida. You're risking your life going through any trails in Florida just because of the wildlife here. And just quick story, a few days ago, I was on my paddleboard in a very backcountry marsh area on the other side of Tampa Bay. And I had seen maybe 5-6 gators on the bank that slip in when they're, startled. And of course I'm like, okay, I'm good. I ended up seeing an 11-foot gator. The head on this guy was, a foot and a half wide. And just when you see that tail slip into the water, something in your heart sinks and you're like, I'm not supposed to be here on this paddleboard. Yeah. And, on my way out of there, I startled a 5-foot gator and he slipped into the water. And I was on my way out, kind of tired, just, moseying out of there. And I was like, I wonder if that was a gator or a loon or, maybe a cormorant. And it ended up being a gator because I looked down and he surfaces his head right next to my foot.
Oh, holy crap.
Next to my paddleboard. And I'm like, just daydreaming, thinking to myself, and I look down and he pops up right next to my foot and I go, oh shit, yes. With the paddle. And then he raises his head out of the water and just tail slaps right next to my paddleboard. And my heart was racing. I was like, if that was that 11-footer, I probably would have, I know I was alone. Like it was, you never know what's going to happen. And this is this is far from people. I was probably, 45 minutes away from the closest person to help me. Holy and crap. that's with a long trail hike that I was in a place I shouldn't have been. But, same thing with those trails. You get back into those backcountry areas and it's not our domain. So I could see how people come well unequipped for just a trail hike through the swamp. And anything with mangroves and old oak trees, you're in for a treat. Yeah.
And thick brush, even though there's a clear trail there, it's a friend of mine on the board cautioned me against ever taking, there's two trails, a long trail, which is a mile and a third, and a short trail, which is about a little more than a third of a mile long. And I would sometimes take the short trail by myself. And she told me that I should not do that anymore, not because, I could come face to face with a female panther with a den of kittens nearby. But because of the fact that it's open to the public, and that means anyone can pull into the parking lot with any intention.
Mm-hmm.
The Refuge has had some problems with the Farius characters who cut the fences and steal the saw palmetto berries, the purple berries, and mm-hmm. saw palmetto plants, because
it's just a huge, huge FWC case with that happening.
Yes, there is. I know the friends have funded the refuge cameras and hotspots for that. You know, and I think they just caught somebody. So
yeah, they had a lot of those berries. Yeah, it's not only like female panthers and, you know, people with ill intentions, but I think my biggest fear of walking trails in Florida would be like a hog, just a big boar or a sow that's just hungry, rooting, and or protecting her little piggies. That's something that you do not want to come and
no,
to encounter with.
Because I definitely don't want to come in contact with that.
They can clear, you know, like a 5-foot jump if they're full stride, you know, so you're not hiding behind anything.
No, thank you. Not taking the trails again by myself.
I don't think we're helping people want to come to Florida.
Well, you're welcome to come to Florida visit.
You got to know your risks.
You're welcome to come to Florida visit. We've got no more room for permanent residents on the south side. No more room.
Same over here on the west coast. Same here. Well, that's awesome. Thank you for diving into that a little bit with us, Becca. Let's shift gears into your Mama Broke Tail story. I know this is a
Mama Broke Tail.
I know this is a topic that you've been waiting to uncover. So let's just go ahead and uncover that one.
Oh, Mama Broke Tail. If I had to choose one wild panther that has stolen my heart, it's Mama B. She's called Broke Tail because at the very end of her tail was kind of crooked. She was born on the Panther Refuge. She's had several litters of kittens on the refuge. There are two specific males that, you know, think she's hot stuff. So we can definitely call her a hot mama. She is a hot mama. She's a beautiful face. She's a great mom. In the last two years, she had a litter of three. And there's video of her teaching her kittens, who were at that time probably just maybe 6 months old, how to go under a wildlife underpass. And the underpass has some water in it. And she starts across it, paddling through the water. And you can hear her call. You can hear her chirping to her kittens, and you can hear them chirping back to her. The first brave one, I call him the brave one. He goes right behind her. Then the second sort of brave one goes right after them. And the third one goes in, he gets about halfway and he's like, nope. And he runs back to the ground. You can see her turn around and she's looking at him and she's calling him. And then the other two kittens turn around and go back where he is. So then she has to go back. And then I think probably like in an hour's time or something like that, she has to go back and get that one, the kittens three times, because she tries to cross with them three times. And the first two kittens go with her or right behind her. And the third one is like barely gets a foot in the water before he turns around and runs back. Nope, not going there. It's probably because he heard vehicles and he didn't know what they were. But you could just see him. He just runs up and he's like, nope, not doing it. Turns around. So I call that kitten the Becca kitten.
You know? That's funny. It's amazing how you fall in love with these animals and get to see the what goes on with their interaction with human-made structures through these trail cams and the stories that you can pull from them.
I know, you know, the trail cameras at that wildlife underpass were paid for and put there by the Florida Gulf Coast University Panther Posse team. They picked the perfect spot. There's another organization called FSPOT Foundation. They also have a lot of great trail cameras across the state of Florida, catching panthers, do things like using underpasses or just you know, in some cases just laying underneath an underpass when it's dry and getting away from the heat. But Mama Rogue-Tail now has, we think she has a litter of two, a brand new litter of two, because the other three had grown up and they left her. Panther kittens usually leave their mom at about 2 years of age. And she now has a new litter. We're not sure who the baby daddy is. It could be the one they call White Spot, who is a really big male that has a white spot up on his forehead. Or the Panther bad boy FP260. Boy, he got himself into some deep shit.
That's a hell of a name. That sounds like a weapon.
Well, you know, they're all given the FP and a number, you know, and his number is 260. Some people wanted to call him Logan. I just call him 60. He's another big boy. He wreaked some total havoc on local ranches, and specifically one ranch in Southwest Florida where he killed and ate so many calves that the ranch owner was calling for his head. I mean, and I know this is, it's hard to say this because some people will take offense to it, but what the hell? All I got to say is, if you were a male panther and you were hungry, would you want to expend all of your energy trying to catch a rabbit or a deer? Or would you rather just go the easy route and go grab a calf?
I would want to go to the buffet because that sounds like someone opened a buffet next to a hungry animal refuge. So that sounds like, while I understand.
That ranch has been there a very long time, you know, and, you know, but there's an estimated 120 to 200 Florida panthers living in the wild, according to any official record, you know, and most of them are in Southwest Florida where the ranches are. But I haven't heard any news this year that he's, you know, been chowing down on the ranch.
Yeah, he's busy making babies.
We hope he's making babies. We think he's the father of the three kittens that Broketail was teaching how to use the underpass. We're not quite sure if he's the father of this new litter of two. But when I tell you that Broketail is a hot mama, you can count on it.
Well, come on, FP260, go get it in, man.
Yeah, you fight that white star guy. You're both big guys. Let's see who wins the battle of Broketail.
Well, that's awesome. I could tell that Broketail has that special place in your heart. Hopefully, FP260, you can meet one day too.
No, he does. He also has a spot in my heart. I've seen pictures of him, and and he's gorgeous, but he's got the fiercest face. I wouldn't want to come up on him on any trail, that's for sure.
Well, that's the thing. You won't see him. He'll see you though.
That's it. People have always said to me, what would happen if you saw a panther on the trail, on the trails? And I'd say, I would probably freeze in my tracks and pee my pants. I just would be stuck there, not believing what I could see and too afraid to move to get out my cell phone to take a video of it.
I love how that's the first thought, not call, you know, any other, you know, refuge members, you know, to come help you in case there's an incident. No, we need to film this.
Yeah. You got to get proof or it didn't happen.
You know, people like, oh, you make that up because you love him so much. No, I was afraid to move. He's big. Well, even the females are big. You know, they're a lot bigger than me, 6 feet long, over 100 pounds.
Yeah. Those are big cats. Becca, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about your current projects. I know we've noted the Florida Panther Festival at the Naples Zoo. Can you touch base on that?
The Naples Zoo every year hosts the Florida Panther Festival, where they invite all of the environmental and wildlife conservation organizations and volunteer groups. And the Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge consider the Naples Zoo to be a great partner. And we're there and we have a table set up. We have brochures and information about the Panther Refuge and about our program. We're usually placed beside the Panther Refuge table. And it's just a great day to meet the people. It's free to cut. It's, I think that it's free to get into the zoo that day, at least in the morning. The festival, I think, is from maybe 9 to 1. There are the Defenders of Wildlife is there, Live Wildly, the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, the Florida Gulf Coast University Panther Policy is there, and just, you know, maybe 20 other wildlife and environmental conservation groups are there. And it's just a fun day. It's a long day because, you know, it takes about 2 hours to get from Fort Lauderdale to the Naples Zoo. So for me, that means I would have to, you know, get up before the break of dawn and do it. But it's one of my favorite things that we do. And they have a panther there. They have Athena.
That's great for, you know, exposure and getting involved with the community. You know, I'm sure while you guys have a lot of people reach out, every bit of interaction that you guys can get with any community is important.
It is, yeah. You know, especially locally. It's great to do that locally. And it's great when people reach out to us on social media or through email, like you guys did, that aren't based in Southwest Florida or South Florida. You know, we have students. Last year was like a big student request year. We had student requests for Panther information from all over the country. And we're doing the end of year science project on an endangered species. And, you know, at least 5 of them chose Florida Panther. So, you know, it's great when kids do that. And think about the Florida Panther, because you think only people here in Florida, you know about the Panther. And a lot of people actually in Florida don't. You know, even the people that live in Naples and Collier County over there, you know, they're like, the what? What do you mean the what? You moved into panther habitat, you know. You're going to see bobcats and deer and wild boars and the occasional panther slinking through your backyard.
Well, I'm glad you guys are able to do that and, you know, garner that interest. And that's important for an endangered species like this. And that's, you know, why we want to do the show on animals like this that are endangered and be able to feature people like yourselves that are involved in organizations that are involved in protecting them. But Koji, I think it might be time to get to our favorite segment of the show. What do you think?
Let's do it, Becca. Let's dive into these wild stories.
Oh, wild stories. Oh, boy. They're wild stories at a dolphin stranding. Can be really hilarious if they're happening to somebody else, you know, or surprising to you if they're happening to you. The first stranding I went on was the rough-tooth stranding, and we had a calf there. That we nicknamed Booger because she was just a little booger. She was a little bratty, super jealous, super affectionate, super very independent little dolphin calf. She loved our director. She didn't like anyone else loving our director. I think her mother was passed away or was euthanized as part of this training. So she was kind of an orphan. But they were near the end of the dolphin training. She was one of 4 left. And dolphins, you know, travel in a pod. And the younger ones are usually in the middle of the pod for safety reasons, of course. But she was a feisty, super independent little girl. And she always maneuvered and pushed her way to the outside. She didn't want to be in the middle. So we could see them trying to move her back in the middle, but she was like, nope, I want to be over here or I want to be over here. It was for those reasons that the officials that regulate marine mammal strandings thought that she would not survive in the wild. So she went to live at Gulf World, which is up in Panama City Beach. She lived a long time there. She was feisty with them. You know, in order to, in order, to feed formula, baby formula for a dolphin calf, you have to get the formula right. And there's a special formula for it and a special mixture. And then you literally have to like pry open their mouths and stick the bottle in and squirt it. But she was very fond of snapping her jaw shut and the volunteer squeezing the bottle end up with formula all over their face. And it's not cheap. You know, marine mammal stranding organizations are usually asking for donations for a reason, because it's not cheap. The fish they eat is restaurant quality, you know, and a lot of times it comes frozen in a big box and you have to thaw it out and not break any fish parts off, inject them with water, because that's how dolphins get hydrated. Sick medicines in there. We had dolphins that for some reason knew which fish had the pills in them and wouldn't touch it. We had dolphins who would eat just a certain kind of fish and who wouldn't. And the fish kitchen that we had, just a freestanding covered structure, was always cleaner and more sanitized than any restaurant, Michelin 5-star rated kitchen. And it took a hell of a long time to get it that way. The fish buckets had to have no scales on them. I remember having to wash fish buckets at least 3 times in a row because our director would find one scale on them. And at that point, you just want to take the bucket and hit somebody upside the head. But I don't want to do that, really. But that little booger was just a booger, you know. And she lived a long time up at Gulf Road, and she recently passed away. And Cutter, I told you about Cutter, the juvenile male, the teenage male, that was super feisty, that flipped himself out of our volunteer's hands when they tried to tag him, knocked me off the surfboard. You know, all I got to say is good job. Lost his GPS tracker. Good job. The dolphin organization that was tracking him for a while, every time I see them speaking somewhere and they ask for questions, I raise my hand and ask them if they have ever been able to locate Cutter after the first initial times, and they always blow off the question.
Like, can someone please have this lady stop asking this question? We lost the dolphin, okay? We lost the dolphin. We lost the tracker. That's it. Can this lady please stop?
Oh, God. She's here again. Can someone please just escort her out?
Oh, that's funny.
So, you know, they've not been very forthcoming with information in there, and I don't consider them to be the friendliest dolphin research organization out there. So anytime someone invites me to one of their events, I just politely pass. Castaway will always have my heart. I was told so many times that I became too close to her. But I don't believe that, because I'm a sensitive kind of person, and I don't think there's ever a way to become too attached to an animal. You know, it just shows that you care, and you care more, and that, you know, that's human nature. You know, it's like Mama Broke Tail. You got to love her. But she was funny. She did a lot. She did a lot of fun. She did a lot. She played a lot of tricks on me in the overnight hours. I love working overnight shifts, because usually we would get volunteers that would just, or tourist volunteers, people that are down there on vacation and they want to come and see the dolphins. And they show up on the site with a dry waste, just nothing but coral rock and coral gravel, in stiletto heels and short dresses, all done up like they were going out in Miami, and wondering why they were getting, you know, the mosquitoes are going smorgasbord, you know, and they want to sit there, and they don't, they freak out when the little Florida pink shrimp are just flip themselves up on the dock, and they're freaking out and just in their high heels. And I'm like, why are you here? Oh, I want to help the dolphins. Well, if you can help the dolphins by, you know, being serious about it and not showing up like you're going to a disco. You know?
I'm sure there were quite a few encounters like that, that you were just like, no, we don't need volunteers today.
Yes. And the number of people that called in that wanted to do like the, like an evening shift. And you would say to them, the evening shift is full of mosquitoes. So if you have an allergy to mosquito bites, if you have an aversion to insects, this is not the shift for you. Oh, no, no problem, no problem. Well, you know, halfway into their shift, they're sitting there in a full wetsuit, with the cap on all the way down, complaining about mosquitoes. I had one guy did that to me. He complained. No one told me. I said, I talked to you on the phone. I remember your name. I talked to you on the phone. I signed you up for the shift, and I said, this shift is full of mosquitoes. If you have a problem with mosquitoes, this is not the shift to take. Oh, no, no problem, you said. I don't remember talking to you. I said, oh, I remember talking to you. So you can go home if you want to, and we won't hold it against you.
He never came back.
I think he came back one other time and complained to our director or somebody that I was rude to him. And then director came to me, and this guy said, you're rude to him. Well, you were rude to him. I looked at him and said, that guy's a fucking asshole. I told him, this shift is full of mosquitoes. If you have a problem with mosquitoes, don't take this shift. 2 hours into his shift, he's sitting there in full wetsuit gear because he's getting eaten by mosquitoes. He goes, well, you're not supposed to be rude to volunteers. I'm like, listen, he's a fucking asshole. I have no respect for him. So it's very hard for me to be diplomatic and polite to someone that I have no respect for who is an asshole, you know?
That's right. You got to keep it real.
You do, you know, and I did get chewed out for that one, but at the end of the day, I just shrugged, and luckily the guy was never on my ships again, and, you know, I got some decent people and I got some duds. You know, you're dealing with people, I mean, and human nature and human behavior. You sit there and you're like, oh my God, how did this woman live so long?
I always say, oh my gosh, these people vote.
Yes. They do, unfortunately, yes. Yes, and you know, Goji, down here in Florida, ay, 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 the people that are voting. But, you know, I'm sure people have said some things about me as an early volunteer. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I wish you would quit asking like a million questions that we all have the answers to. Beats me. Whenever I came home, I smelled completely of deep woods off. I had bug repellent all over me. You want a wild story about that? I had an old car one time when I was driving up the 18 mile stretch, which is a long road that goes from the Upper Keys all the way up to Homestead. Or no, Florida City. And it was an old car. The air conditioning didn't work, so I had the windows open. So we're stopped on here because there's an accident. It has just rained just enough to make, of course, everything stink and bring every living mosquito in the world to that one area. So I'm sitting in there, and hordes of mosquitoes are flying in my car. And I'm taking a towel and sweating all around, and I'm sure people are looking at me like I'm having a spastic fit. I get out my bug spray, my mosquito spray, and spraying down the car, swatting at everything. You know, I did that for an hour before the traffic started to move, and then I drove as fast as I could to blow them out the windows. But I did come in with quite a few mosquito bites on that trip.
Yep, you got to be prepared for that. I smell like DEET and offwoods every time I come off the water.
Yep.
I get eaten up. No-see-ums and mosquitoes.
Oh, no-see-ums. I hate those suckers.
The worst when they get your eyelids.
Yes.
And they start biting under your eyelids, and then you're like, I'm just going to die right here.
Yes. And Koji, what the hell is the matter with people complaining about, you know, wanting to use anything with DEET? I mean.
Right.
It's, you know, we've had people come down there using the all-natural citronella oil. Oh, no, I'm wearing the all-natural citronella oil, but you don't realize that that becomes like glue to mosquitoes. And then they're just stuck on people. I don't want to put any poison on. I'm like, no, give me the poison. Spray it on, you know.
As long as you don't inhale it.
Yeah, don't inhale it. But you know, you in heavy mosquito areas, you just really have to use what works, you know. So
yeah, and I think, you know, to kind of wind down the episode, you know, finding the proper information, the correct information on how to prepare yourself for coming to Florida. Because people come to Florida and they think it's just beaches
and Disney.
And you got to drive through, yeah, beaches and Disney. And, you know, you got to drive through some questionable areas to get to the populated, gentrified, beautiful cities that people want to live in, with hipster coffee makers and breweries around every corner and murals on every building. But to get to those areas, you got to go through Old Florida. Mm-hmm. And Old Florida is some of the most beautiful landscapes in the U.S., in my opinion, and some of the most diverse. With that being said, it's organizations like yours and a few guests that we've had on the show before that help preserve and help, you know, bring awareness to these refuges and, you know, really just shine a light on that. So not everyone's built for Florida. That's an absolute fact. Yeah. I mean, you got to be willing to put up and not put up, but more so coexist with the wildlife we have here. Otherwise you're just a part of the food chain.
That's true. And that's part of any volunteer organization, in Florida, is the outreach to the people that just moved here, the people that knew that, you know, that moved here during COVID, the people that are moving here now and moving into, you know, what's left of some wild open spaces and, you know, don't understand why there's a couple of bobcats running through the yard or why a Florida panther just deprecated their cat. You're moving into wildlife habitat. If you don't know what that means, we'll be glad to come and tell you. And we've joined other organizations in doing that, you know, but they have to know, and they just don't. They want to move here because it's, you know, no income tax and it's supposedly sunny and beautiful all the time.
Except for 3 to 4 o'clock every day.
Yes. Well, right before you called, there was a hellacious thunder and lightning storm, and lightning was striking close here, and I thought all the power would go out. So I was getting ready to email you from my phone to tell you that I had no power.
Well, I'm glad that didn't happen.
Me too.
We're glad you made it on the show, Becca. I think this is a great way to shift into the closing of the show. Let the audience know how to contact you and the friends, and how to get involved.
Well, if anyone wants to contact me or Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge, you can email us at contact@floridapanther.org. We are also on Facebook. Just type in the search bar, Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge, and it will come up. You will also see in there that we have a new Shopify store where you can buy some cool Panther Friends merchandise. You know, we're more than happy to welcome anyone that wants to join the Friends of the Florida Panthers mission, which is to support Florida Panther Refuge staff and their mission and their goals, and to shed more light on the National Wildlife Refuge system as a whole. We're an extremely easygoing group. We don't have super-powered board meetings, you know. We just, if you can't make it, just email or text someone and it's okay. We can, you know, we go on, you know. You can donate any amount of money to us on our website, which is floridapanther.org, or not. Or you can just send us an email note. You can join our mailing list, and when we have news, we'll email everyone that news. You don't have to be from Florida. You don't have to be from the United States. You can be from anywhere you want to be, and we're happy to have you learn more about us and contact us if you have questions or you have a school project you want to do. Your company's looking for a not so famous volunteer organization. That's us. We're just happy and grateful for any support. And any extra people we can to join our mission.
That's awesome. I hope you gain some extra people from this.
Me too.
Yeah, and hopefully no assholes come onto your volunteer shift.
And we've had a few of those.
It's fucking assholes. We have to make sure the terminology is correct. Well, all right. Well, thank you, Becca, for joining us on today's show. We're glad to have you.
Oh, thanks so much for inviting me. Not many people know about, you know, friends groups or Friends of the Florida Panther Refuge, and we're so happy that you contacted us to do this podcast, and it's my very first one, so I hope I didn't screw it up.
No, I think you did good.
No, you did great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, Becca. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Unprotected.